Welcome to the Helping Friendly Podcast, episode 67. In this episode, we'll be marking the 20th anniversary of Fish's show at the Palace in Auburn Hills, Michigan, 10/28/1995. And that happens to have been the first show of this episode's guests, Brad and RJ. Welcome, guys.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, guys. It's good to have you here.
So weird to be sitting on this side of the screen.
This is awesome. I'm usually behind the desk.
It's a lot of responsibility back here, but I'll try to fly this thing right.
So, Jonathan, thanks for agreeing to do this. We're excited to talk about this, Brad. And I think throughout the past 60-some episodes, I've mentioned this show from time to time, but have never kind of gone into it. It was fun to revisit. We were just chatting about it before we started. It's going to be fun. 20 years is a long-ass time. It's longer than most of the things I've done in my life, you know?
I was thinking that it's really crazy that, you know, I was 16 when we went to the show. I'm now 36. So I've been listening to Fish for more than half my life, which I'm sure a lot of people have, but it's cool to think about in those terms, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also got a chance to, RJ, I was texting with Justin today, who was like, our fellow fish head when we were this age, he'd go to the shows with us. So that's it. And I don't really chat with him anymore. So it's fun that we got to, you know, go back on this. It brings us together, I guess.
Nice. That's awesome.
First shows are pretty special. They're, you know, like your first immersion into Fish, you know, you think, you know, Fish, and then you go to your first show. So, maybe you guys could kind of tell us about what led you to see your first show.
I mean, Brad and I pretty much have the same path. That's what's interesting, I guess. It seems like we both kind of follow the same path. But we, you know, people in school were listening to The Dead and listening to...
we were really into Umphrey's.
Classic rock. And The Fish just came up in a lot of different contexts at the same time. We had a friend, this guy, Ed, who... big Fish fan, and several people at our school, and it just kind of came together. But I think I started collecting tapes maybe at the beginning of 95, and I was sending out envelopes and things. So I was really pretty excited to finally see them in concert, and it's definitely one of the first shows I ever saw.
Yeah, like went by myself to a live rock and roll concert at a big stadium like this. This was definitely the first one. I think we'd been to, I was like, Lollapalooza 95 at an outdoor venue. It was Pine Knob. I don't know what it is now, like DTE or something, up near Detroit. Obviously a huge fan of The Dead. I don't, you know, thinking back, you know, I'm always frustrated that I missed the 94 shows that came close, but I don't really know many people who went, like, within my larger circle of friends, or like, you know, friends of friends. So I really wouldn't have had that much of an opportunity to go. My sister saw The Dead a few times in 93. I was too young, according to my father, to go to those. So I was really excited. I mean, this is like what a few years of, you know, listening to live shows and bootlegs and that kind of stuff really led to, you know, this October night.
I just want to add that the trading of tapes and the collecting of tapes was a perfect hobby for a perfect combination of, you know, taking advantage of slight OCD tendencies, so of baseball card collecting, but also mixing it with drugs and music. So it was like this awesome hobby. And also there was this like internet thing that you could go to Andy Goodeal's Fish page and like refresh it, and it would take like 15 minutes, but you could see the set list from the night before. And that was just like, it was such a, it's, I don't know, the best way I can put it is that it was a hobby, you know, that I identified with and started kind of taking pretty seriously even before we saw the show. So it was leading up to that, going to the show.
It's certainly an excellent nexus of a variety of interests. I think that most of us probably share. Did you guys have your first it moment at this show, or was it listening to tapes, or maybe take you a couple shows?
Doesn't make for great podcasting, but there's not a whole lot I recall like firsthand. I totally remember a song in the first set, and then obviously the Chess thing was cool because it was actually two songs in the first set, and then the Chess thing was cool. As I thought that was totally different, but you know, nothing really like took me away to that place that we all call it. I think that was later the same year, though, in December. I went to the Cleveland show, 12-8, I think.
Lovely.
And I had a greater grasp of like what to expect and how to consume it, I guess. And that was like this, like 2001 into Tweezer into Kung was like, I'm like this, I need to see more of this. So, not to down talk this show, it's a really good show, but you know what I mean? It was like,
oh yeah,
I was this little 16-year-old kid who didn't even, you know, couldn't grow a mustache if I wanted to. Not that I wanted to, but you know what I'm saying? Just young and dumb. And,
what's wrong with mustaches?
They're wonderful. I'm just saying I couldn't do it.
They're the best.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's like the palace is huge. It's a huge place. I saw Def Leppard there with my mom, but my mom was with me. So it's like, you know,
that you had that. Count.
Right. It doesn't count. And you weren't like in it by yourself. And this was, that whole experience was really overwhelming in a good way. But at the same time, I was still kind of not 100% into, you know, every note that Trey was laying down.
RJ?
Yeah, Brad, I wonder how many other people have been to a Def Leppard show with their mom. You know, I feel like you might be among the few and the privileged, you know?
Are you serious? My mom also took me to the Pointer Sisters. That was pretty awesome.
Nice.
I hope our listeners will let us know if they too went to Def Leppard with their mom.
For sure. Yeah, I don't know. I agree with Brad on the music piece. I mean, it was too much to like process at the time, I think. I remember a lot of the songs, but I remember that specifically where I was sitting and all that, but musically, I think the specific songs, which I know we'll get into, were memorable in different ways. But I think my first real hip moment probably honestly came in the fall of '97 when I first show I saw that tour, which was Champagne, and that was the pinnacle of any music I've ever seen live, you know. And that was, by that time I'd seen a bunch of other shows, and that was just totally blew me away and kind of was the deal breaker for life. But the biggest it moment about the show, I think, was just seeing the scene, you know, in person, and seeing the scene as a 16-year-old, seeing that all these people actually traveled around and made a living by selling things and in parking lots, and there are all these insane people and different kind of people, and showed that there was this like community that existed outside of our little high school existence, which was all we really knew at the time.
It's a great, I want to add to that. I think it's a great point, but I had like my cargo pants on and my tie dye, and I was like, you know, totally into it. And I walked up, I was like in the, you know, in the crush to get in through the doors, and the people in front of me like saw somebody they knew, and they're like, hey, whatever. And then somebody said, oh, hey, it's like, it's, you know, Sally's 100th show tonight. And I was like, what the fuck? I'm like, this is their 100th show? Of this band? Like, I mean, like, of every band or just Fish? And they're like, no, Fish show, man. I was like, holy shit. Yeah. I was like, whoa, that's awesome. And that was my first realization. Like, whoa, this is like a pretty serious community about this band. And these people have traveled great distances to see them. So it kind of made the expectations even greater, I guess, for what was to come. Well, and go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was actually going to ask you guys about that, about the scene, and what your thoughts about it. And maybe we can talk a little more. But I wanted to say that I think the idea of not having the big hit moment at your first show, I think, is probably pretty common. I mean, you guys, like as you guys said, you were 16. It seems perfectly reasonable to go in there and be overwhelmed and need a little more prep time to really get it,
yeah,
to really go beyond at a future show. So do you have any other memories, thoughts about the scene in particular, or other things that struck you want to talk about before we get into the music?
I mean, I guess the thing I would say, and this is just sort of the context, I mean, this is a huge place, as I think Brad mentioned. And I think then the night before, which we weren't at, but the night before was a totally small, little, intimate place, and then going to this giant arena. So I wonder, music-wise, we didn't know that at the time, but music-wise, it seems to have like just been a totally different thing than people had seen previously on the tour. And I wonder if that's part of why like some of this music is just, it's just a weird show in a good way. It's like weird and dark and trippy and, you know, exploratory, and going from a tiny arena into this huge, huge venue is a pretty big contrast, you know? I think the it moment thing is something that is, I haven't actually reflected on that until we just started talking about it, but you know, there's such a big focus on like what moments, you know, grab you at shows, and in which, and we, our memory goes back to specific shows and specific jams and sets and whatnot, but it's really like it's the accumulation of all that stuff, you know, the accumulation of all the memories and stuff that makes those first memories like more accessible. Does that make sense? You kind of have to go through a lot more and gather more data in order to like fully, I think what you were saying, fully appreciate it. But it's set such a strong foundation for seeing more shows, you know. It left an impression that made us all want to go back and see more, whatever our first shows were. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Turn me on to Mike's Bluegrass, this show. You know, I had been like a student of it or anything. I'm still not, but it really made me appreciate it. And it started me into like listening to other types of, you know, real bluegrass, I guess.
yeah.
Original bluegrass, you know, the Bill Monroe stuff. So I thought that was really cool. The first show is it's a good like jumping off place, I guess, for people to look at like their own history of the band and like where you got on and what the band was doing at that point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, we'll go ahead and jump in the music here. So as usual, we're going to split this episode into two parts. We'll do the first set this week and then set two next week, which I think will roughly coincide with the anniversary of this show. So we're going to play set one now, and we'll come back in a bit and talk about what we heard.
Thank you. Through the corridor, I came upon an aging knight who leaned against the wall in gnarly armor. He was on his way to see the king. Wilson, Wilson, Wilson. He led me through the streets of pressure talking as he tried to brush upon that stone underneath his blue wheel. He said there was a place where we should go. So he led me through the forest to the edge of a lagoon. I wish we wandered till we reached a lovely spring. The night grew very quiet as we stood there. He lifted up his visor and he turned to me and he began to say, he said, I come from the land of darkness. He said, I come from the land of doom.
Chaffinch. Or to be Prince Caspian with stumps instead of feet. Thank you.
All right, welcome back. That was the first set of 1028-95 from the Palace in Auburn Hills, Michigan. Set opened with AC/DC Bag. It fish.net says it went into mound. And then we heard Timber, Uncle Penn, Sample, The Lizards, Billy Breathes, A Nice Acoustic Army. We heard Prince Caspian, and the set closed with an Antelope. Pretty great first set, whether it was your first show or, you know, your 100th, like those people in front of me, I think. Let's start off with the Bag, you guys. I mean, that AC/DC was, it made me, I don't know, I guess nostalgic is the best word for those 8-minute AC/DCs that, you know, they used to jam out like this. They don't, not that they don't do it any at ever anymore, but man, it was really fun.
Yeah, it was a nice long kind of groovy Bag, you know, and I hadn't listened to this in I don't even know how many years, and it just took me right into that 95 space.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, this is definitely my favorite opener. Of if I could choose any opener, this would be it. I guess that's a specific remnant of this first show, but they, I remember that seeing people dancing and seeing people really right off the bat kind of getting into it in a longish sort of song was pretty interesting, and the really good, I mean, the jam was great. And then I remember specifically Mound, the next song, being like very that was like my what is this band doing moment, you know, with like the yeah. the offbeat mm-hmm. drums and the clapping, and you're just right. like it made me want to learn more and become part of this, figure out how to become part of this group as opposed to like running away like this is insane. But it actually was insane too, you know what I mean?
It's a pretty odd number.
It was for me, it was really cool because, you know, I listened to Rift 1,000 times before this, and I thought it was funny on the Fish OD recording the version, like the people around the taper were nowhere near being like on time, like they weren't even on time with each other, you know what I mean? It was really funny to listen, but that's the way it is, you know, and that's probably part of the reason they do it, just kind of as a silly thing. I also want to note before we move on is that they opened this show with AC/DC, and then I think the next Palace show they opened with Buried Alive, and
'96.
Those two songs, the '96, those two songs I think are my two favorite openers, so
nice.
It's kind of funny that you know, both shows, the first two shows the Palace had them, but
and what's not to love?
Yeah.
So yeah, Mound was great, and it was followed by Timber, or Timber Jerry if you look at Fishnet, or Timber Ho if it's how we would have written it on our tapes in 95.
Yeah.
With an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Timber
Ho. Timber Ho is definitely what I think the song's called, but
I like this version. It was, you know, everything about this show, I'm going to say this a bunch, so it was kind of a classic version. It's just kind of, it's not super long but not too short, and it's good rocking little jam that reminded me of something off some soundtrack I heard somewhere once, and this is good stuff. Brad, what do you think about it?
You know, I think I've probably said this before as we're 60 some episodes in, but I think this song fits Trey's voice, or Trey makes it fit his voice like really well. I just love the way he sings it. Kind of like My Soul a little bit. It's a cover that he's really made his own as far as, you know, the vocals go. It was a glimpse, I think, into like some dark jams we'd get later, even, you know, 5 years later or whatever, I think. Because, I don't know what I'm starting to say. I guess in 3.0, you don't get those sort of like darkest jams. Karini might take us there nowadays in 3.0, right. But like Timber, it's great. It's really cool. And this is like this and Uncle Penn were the two songs that I really remembered from the first set, and going back, I know why, just because they were totally different, and I didn't know a band who could transition like that from Timber to Uncle Penn, like this band in front of me just did. I was like, this is crazy.
It's quite a move. RJ?
Yeah, I mean, this, looking at this set list and talking about this show is like, It's so weird to, it's so like burned into my memory that it's hard to go back and like break it down song by song, because I've listened to it so many times, you know. But the construction of the set is like sort of a little odd, with Timber being right here as like a third song, first set kind of thing. I don't know, maybe I should look at more 95 to know if that's true or not, but it seems like we're going into a lot of different directions here, and then Uncle Penn, and then, you know, Uncle Penn next, sorry. But it's hard to like think about these songs in isolated from each other, because the whole thing is just so like burned into my memory. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but feel free to take it in chunks. I mean,
yeah,
it does to me. It feels like 95, because this kind of song selection is my kind of thing, frankly. So I'm really excited to be revisiting this show. It's hard to say revisiting. I know I've listened to it, but it's been so long. And Uncle Penn, I said it on here before, and I haven't been on 67 episodes, but I know I've said that I love the bluegrass when Fish plays bluegrass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or when bluegrass people play bluegrass. And so Uncle Penn, yeah. It's an excellent version of it. This is the kind of thing I still dream of seeing at any show I go to. And then
Trey's fingers are nimble with the Uncle Penn, and it really, you know, shines when he's playing it like that. But I agree too, RJ, that like this is, you know, I think Mike's usually like a third song in the set, and they play Timber, and then they played a Mike song, which is, I don't know, it's different than you know, we usually think about it, I guess.
Construction was less predictable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then this sample, which I don't remember at all, but I'm sure it was rockin' and cool.
But just like it is on here. It's rockin' and cool, you know. It's a sample. Yeah. And then I'm sorry, Brad, do you want to talk about sample?
No.
Okay. Then you get a really nice Lizards out of that. And so I'm sure the people who were at their 100th show were like, yeah, all these Game Henge songs. And you guys were like, this is cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much. And Lizards is definitely something I remember. It's probably one of the things I remember most. And just that it was very, very pleasant, you know, and just really nice.
Yep.
Just a really fun, nice song that definitely was contrasted with the Timber, at least, but also Mound, and just like the strangeness of those two in a row. And Lizards was just a total like breath of fresh air, you know, especially before you get into the end of this set, which was also pretty intense.
So RJ, I know you mentioned before that you had been trading tapes before you got to this show. Had you gotten a copy of The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday at this point, do you think?
Yeah, that was definitely among the first. So we definitely had that kind of, we were just still learning about the tales.
So that's, I remember this Lizards made me want to go back and like learn everything about it. I'd listened to it a few times, but you know what I mean? It was like, man, this is, you know, I felt like I don't know enough about this. I need to do my homework or whatever.
Yeah. So that was the, another thing I was wondering, and kind of applies a lot to the next couple of songs, is, you know, overall, how much of this was totally brand new material for you guys? You know, you had the albums, I would presume, or most of them at that point, and some tapes, but you probably not heard Billy Breathes before.
Yeah, definitely not. And maybe not even, I don't think we had heard, I don't think I had heard it at all. Maybe that was the only song that I hadn't heard, but I'm not positive offhand, but I think that's probably.
We probably had a couple Summer 95 tapes, so Caspian, Acoustic Army weren't out of the,
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, both
the Lowell show. Sorry. The Lowell show was the one I remember getting, you know, the opener. I feel like that was really highly circulated, but the quality wasn't very good. But like everyone was passing it around because it had so many new songs, you know.
Yeah, it had all those firsts that everybody had to have that tape right away. So what did you think? You know, the Billy Breeze Acoustic Army is kind of a lot of a breather in your first set. Did you didn't know any better though, so. Do you recall the breather, or listening to it now, do you think, wow, it's really nice? How would you like it now? I don't know.
Yeah. Going back, I thought the Billy Breeze is beautiful, and they should do it more often. Just a really nice, beautiful song. I heard about the Acoustic Army just like through Goodeal's page and things, so I thought that was cool that we got to see it. But it wasn't something that, you know, was burned into my mind or anything. I thought it was cool that we got to see it, and I was like, I wrote it in my set list. I think I asterisked it or whatever in my little notebook, just because I thought it was like not really a song. It was them being cool or whatever. I don't know.
It was both.
Yeah, I had no idea. I had no idea what was going on. I mean, this is like, they were just doing stuff and I was listening, you know. There was no like, it was the age of innocence, you know, of being a Fish fan. There was no expectation, there was no criticism, there was no like anxiety about like what are they going to play next, what are they not going to play. It was just like, it was just there, you know.
But it really does sound accurate and kind of a, you know, I talk about no expectations in shows all the time. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect spot for it. So then they let me
clarify that, like, that I did not have a set list notebook with me at that time. Like, this was like going back and putting it in there.
Okay.
I was not, you know, I didn't know anything about that until a few shows in, obviously.
That's fair. And I will just say, I just want to say also that I think the no expectations thing, I feel like personally I have maybe 2 years ago, so 18 years after my first show, finally been able to access that again, you know, the no expectations, like actually going to a show and being happy with anything they play and anything I hear. And those years in between were not necessarily like that, especially like mid 1.0, 2.0 and early 3.0, I guess most of it. But, yeah. You know, I'm very content with getting back to that place of no expectations, you know.
I think I found it right about the same time, and it is nice to be there.
But to excuse it, I think is to say that getting the full breadth of knowledge or whatever of the band makes you then start counting the songs and chasing the songs and wanting to see something after something, you know, so that it's like a natural progression, and then you become old and wise. I'm just not there yet.
I know, Brad.
Someday, maybe Brad, tomorrow.
That Dick's last year, Brad was really stomping his feet and crossing his arms when they weren't playing his songs, making a sad face.
I talk the talk, but if you get to the latter part of a Mike's groove, you're going to see me waiting and watching to see if they're going to play Hydrogen or not.
Yeah.
When they don't, you know, unless they really blow my mind, I'll probably at least for a moment go, damn.
Yeah. And then you drag down then, the you drag
and then
down
I
the average
get right
rating,
down to it.
Then you drag down the average rating on Fishnet. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, that's me.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Stats per usual.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was kind of a takeaway. It was like, we have no idea, you know, and that's part of the beauty of it. I remember by fall 97 I was, or summer 97, I had a lot of expectations. That's almost 2 years later and hundreds of tapes later and understanding a lot more about their music and catalog. And I remember like just wanting them to be a certain way. And they were different. I mean, it was better in retrospect, but they weren't where I was expecting them to be. So therefore, it was like somewhat, there were times that were disappointing. But now in retrospect, Summer 97 was awesome. So luckily that all...
It should also never be disappointing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it all calibrated in fall 97 when everything was just perfect no matter what. But there was
except
like a
Coventry.
Weird... What? That wasn't
Coventry.
Fall 97?
No, that was disappointing.
Oh, yeah. That was expected to be disappointing. Sorry, Jonathan, we're hijacking your
conversation. Oh, hey, you know, everybody's here to listening to hear the guests. So.
Finally, we got a chance to talk.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Anyway, there's been some other stuff I've been wanting to say, too.
Wait. So, did we talk about Caspian, or does the expectations conversation cover it? I like the Caspian, by the way. I like old early Caspians with this kind of Fishman thumping on the floor tom intro and stuff, and it sounds really good. But it's just Caspian.
It was different to me going back than, you know, what we hear now with Caspian. But yeah. I like all Caspians, and I would never use an expletive to refer to it.
No, I use that name for my cat.
Nice. I thought it was really short though, right? It was just like, it was like 3 minutes or something, which is like a nice little short interlude.
A little bit more of that, you know, short breather song thing. And then they played Antelope.
Yeah. Definitely remember that well. I mean, that's just such a rager, and that's super, man, they were really, really intense about playing Antelope in these years.
Well, it turns out if I'm at a show, they're going to play Antelope. So they played Antelope, and I heard my first two shows. I think, you know, like Zizek stats or whatever say that I've seen it like 38% of the time or something like that. So last time I checked, it's a lot.
Yeah,
that is that's a lot.
So I've seen it a lot, and I don't hate it every time I see it. That's for sure.
Sweet. Well, this one is a pretty good one to start on, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not out of this world different. It's just pretty much standard great 95 Antelope.
Was it like, how long was it, like 14 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
Not that it matters, but.
Yeah. But that's about right. And, you know, so it doesn't go too far too deep, but it, you know, rips appropriately and ends a set, leaving you jumping up and down going, oh, more. Oh, they're coming back, right? Yeah. Something like that, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the break, you know, from the jam into the Marco Escuandola sort of sequence is definitely the lights, the way it just changes, you know. It's just, it's something, if you're seeing it live for the first time, that's pretty remarkable. And we talk about the way the lights, you know, the lights interact with the experience, but on some of those older songs where you know when the lights are gonna change over at the break of a song, those are the things that when I take people to shows when it's like their first show, I'm like, you gotta watch this. This is important, you know. That or the
focus on the lights,
or when Reba goes into the jam, or when, you know, there's a lot of those moments that where you just like wait for it, and it's really powerful.
You know what else I took away from this Antelope the first time was like just Page and how much he played a part in the band, where I thought before he was just kind of, you know, it's hard for him to come through on tapes, especially if it's like a third gen or fourth gen or whatever. So I thought he really stood out to me the first time, and he was really nice in this Antelope.
Yeah. You know, Page is pretty on it through the whole show, I thought. You know, had a great break in the Lizards and everywhere, really. And yeah, I thought he definitely took a lot of the load in the Antelope as they peaked it out. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, really good first set. I don't remember, just to go back for one sec, I don't really remember the Acoustic Army at all. I don't remember them sitting there with acoustic guitars at all. I don't know, maybe I was in the bathroom or something, but apparently that would have been a really cool thing to see, probably.
It was cool.
It's one of those things I wish I had seen, you know what I mean? Like, I wish that I had a memory of that. But
you could recall it, yeah.
Oh, man.
But I've seen pictures.
My kids have seen pictures.
Exactly.
Right. Awesome.
Cool. And that, did they play Keyboard Cavalry? Was that Dix?
Yeah.
This
year? Sticks? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was 95 when they did that, right? Acoustic Army and this and the Keyboard Cavalry.
Right.
That's a pretty cool couple, you know, little special things they did that year.
Rotation Jam also came up in that year. Saw a couple of those.
Later. Yeah. When I think of one, I think of the other two almost immediately. Just kind of like your brain goes there into them. Their little antics. And even, they're not really antics, though. They're just kind of like showing off, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
that sounds about right.
And then a couple really long, real boring tweezers were in 95 too. Remember that? Some other stuff.
Never heard of it.
I don't know. It seems like somebody would have done a radio show about it or
yeah,
something.
Sure. What a bunch of lazy asses. Yeah, so that was fun. Thanks, Jonathan.
I'm glad you guys had this one as your first. I probably wouldn't have got to it anytime soon. So,
Jonathan, although, what shows did you see in fall 95?
I saw Hampton, I saw Cap Center, I saw Hershey, which rules your face, and I saw Philly 12/15.
Awesome.
So nice.
Good shows.
Yeah, it was fun. We were seeing a show like every other week or something. I probably could have done a couple of more, but I was trying not to lose my job. And
yeah, you can't go back on it like that.
Yeah, you know, I don't regret it. It was a lot of fun. We saw some great stuff. So
nice.
Yeah, it was a fun tour. I'm looking forward, and I'll go ahead and spoiler alert: tell people we'll be revisiting a little fall December '95 in a future episode.
That's true. But
this has been a lot of fun. Set was pretty good, and we'll be back next week with set two, which has great stuff, and we'll have our guests Brad and RJ back with us.
Oh yeah.
So now.
Until then, you can find us at HFPod on the Twitter and HFPod.com. Please don't forget to rate us on the iTunes, because people think that's important, and so do I. Until then, RJ, what do you have to say?
I think that people should keep on rocking. Until next week, thank you.